Amory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
I'm Don, that's Timmery. Welcome to the very first edition of Trending with Don and Timmery. Timmery, this is exciting. Brand new show.
We're making history here, Don.
It is a great time to cover current events from a Catholic perspective, I think. And it's something we're passionate about. And so, Timmery, it's fantastic to be here. What's trending this week, Timmery?
What's trending this week? You know, it's been really interesting. This has kind of erupted over the last month. But in Australia, shout out to all of our listeners in Australia, there is a piece that came out on the Daily Telegraph, and it's basically addressing a new piece that came out that's created a lot of outcry, and that the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, also known as OECD, recently let out a report which had the audacity, some people are saying, to suggest that stay-at-home moms would be better off putting their skills to use working out in the public sphere. Now,
I can't imagine why that would get anybody upset.
Well, what I think's more so audacious, here's really, in a sense, a government-related report saying you women need to work. But here are these radical feminists. And when I say radical feminists, I'm talking about women who are often pro-abortion, who are often in favor of blurring the lines between men and women. So they're taking up the reins of the gender ideology movement, and also don't always have a strong backbone with regard to morality, LGBTQ issues, and so forth. And also, this falls right in line with it, a disrespect for freedom for women to choose when and where they're going to work. I mean, Don, it is so offensive. There's a piece again at the Daily Telegraph, Sarah Lee Marquand, who is the editor-in-chief of Stellar Magazine, essentially comes out here saying that it should be legally required that any women with children within the age of going to school or older should have to work.
They should have to.
Because, you know, they don't have anything they're doing for the family,
right?
They're just sitting at home twiddling their thumbs or going to yoga and that's it, right?
Tell me, what is the mindset behind telling another woman that she needs to get out of her house, stop caring for her kids so much, or at least putting so many hours into that? And they've got to be justifying this somehow. What's the good here?
Here's the big picture. So the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has come out stating that women need to work more because there's a concern about the economy down the road. As more people are retiring, Australia, so we're specifically talking about Australia. Australia has seen very low numbers between the ages of 25 and 54, the lower third of countries for women who are working in the public sphere outside of the home. And so they're saying this is concerning because besides Ireland and Turkey, they're the lowest for the developed world, essentially. What a tragic thing. You know what? I just have to say, Ireland, Turkey, Australia, good for you for recognizing that children come first.
Well, the whole thing just seems to be so backwards, right? Like, you're telling me that a pro-woman movement, someone and a group that is ostensibly in favor of women's rights, women's
yes.
freedoms, women's exaltation in society, is taking a whole group of women and taking complete control of their free will,
exactly.
of their choice.
But here's what justifies it. The report warned the economy would face in Australia, quote, a future shortage of labor at the population as the population ages. So unless, the article continues, unless efforts were made to help older women, Indigenous Australians and moms into the workforce, we're going to see a huge economic impact because we care about the economy. That's what comes first.
I mean, the first thing that strikes me about that is if you actually cared about the economy, you would have had more kids. The reason you have such an old workforce and your demographics are leading to an economic spiral, something we talked about on last week's show, I think, Timory, is that you're not having enough kids.
We're not having enough children. Well, and this gets back to even earlier in the week, our last episodes of Hearts and Minds, we actually talked about how so many people are unhappy today.
Yeah.
And I think that this unhappiness, this I have no friends, this idea that my work is meaningless, I have no meaning to my life, has to do with the fact that people are not sacrificing and having families and seeing the importance of this.
And does anyone really think that they're going to be happier if they all go out into the workforce and let's just assume they do make more money? I'm not actually willing to grant that. I actually think that economically that's not going to work out well. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that, yeah, you send everybody out into the workforce and for a while everyone will have more cash. So this is what you're saying to me, Miss Feminist, that if I force all the women that are currently at home with their kids,
yes,
I force them all out into the workforce so that all of us can have more money, that you are going to result, that the result will be a happier culture. Does anyone think that's true?
Well, this is what's sad, too, is that in the piece from the Daily Telegraph, it's actually talking about how because it's so popular in Australia for women, for moms to be at home caring for their homes, being homemakers, you know, nothing wrong with it, doing work to make that possible. Because of this, there's been a lot of radio, television articles really defending the woman in the home. And so this woman's saying, well, look at this report. Here you go. For once, we're not going to hear you defending having women at home because they've heard the arguments. And I think that if they've heard the arguments, and they've had their own experiences, I think you hit the nail on the head. It comes from the mindset in many ways of this very pro-abortion and pro-contraception mindset. And I think people are speaking from a place of brokenness or from a place of a defensiveness because they've chosen a lifestyle outside of the home.
Yeah. Do you think that it is more of a, I'm hesitant to say misery loves company, but in a sense that I'm not willing to see you over there with your happy family, living at home, doing what you... Why would I not be willing to let you do that? I mean, hey, I'm free to go into the workforce if I want. I'm free to live whatever life. I don't want to have any kids. That's certainly possible these days. You don't have to have kids. No one's forcing you to.
You can even get rid of the ones you have.
Absolutely. Not. Absolutely. You can get rid of... So why would I force you? And it does seem to be, Timory, I think you're right, that underlying is a sense that we're all going to make the same choices that I made, regardless. I mean, you flip it around. Let's say they wanted to pass a law where all women had to stay home and produce kids, right? I mean, how would that be presented?
It's an infringement on freedom. Even when we're talking about moral topics of, hey, you shouldn't have an abortion or whatever it is, I don't come in and say, you can't have one. I don't force you to do anything. I don't force you not to have contraception. While I might be in favor of a law that protects a natural right to human life, still, even then, your freedom has been respected. If you want to go and obtain an illegal abortion, I'm going to do what I can to help you and save that child. But there's still a respect for freedom.
That's the big ironies of all of these movements, I think, that the feminists who claim they want freedom of choice and exaltation of women and respect for women are actually fighting against the one worldview in the history of the world that has actually produced all of those things. Like the one worldview in the history of the world that has produced respect for women, that has given women freedom to go out into the workforce if you wanted to for that, right? All of those things, or stay at home. The one worldview that has done all of those things, that protects women in the face of men who want to treat them as objects. The one worldview is Christianity. Like that is the worldview that historically has resulted in those things.
Christianity elevated the status of women
Absolutely.
In a very male-dominant culture, the Jewish
Absolutely.
People.
Yeah, the worldview that exalts what historically have been looked at as the least,
yes.
women and children. And this is just, I mean, we're not making any value judgments. Just historically, women and children have been looked at as less than men mm-hmm. in just about every culture in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. Only Christianity has exalted them. The history of the women's movement in the West is a Christian movement. And you're right, from the times of the Roman Empire on, women and children have been protected, exalted, respected within Christianity. It's terribly ironic and frankly sad that the women's movement now, what it has morphed into, not the origins of it, right? I mean, like we said, the origins of the women's movement is Christian.
Were necessary too.
Yeah, absolutely necessary and good. But it has morphed into this thing that's actually like fighting against the goals that it has set out for itself. Like you're actually fighting against respect for women. You're fighting against freedom for women by mm-hmm. saying that, well, if you're a true feminist, you have to be a pro-abortion person, which is also part of this movement, that you have to not have kids. You have to get out into the workforce. All of these things, so negative and authoritarian and anti-woman.
Well, and what's sad, Don, is that people are saying for the sake of gender equality that women and men both need to share the experiences of having to work and balancing home life in order for there to be any achievement in gender equality.
Yeah, and is there going to be gender equality when everyone is treated, in a sense, the quote, same? Essentially saying, let's have everybody treat each other like men historically have treated them. No, what you actually get is the objectification of women and the degradation of women. That's ultimately what that looks like. So interesting happenings in Australia there. We'll have more on that and many more of this week's trending topics when we come back. You're listening to Don Johnson and Timory Millington.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. The studios of Immaculate Heart Radio. You're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timory, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So we're talking about this controversy in Australia right now, as a piece has been released specifically from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, addressing that they think more women who are now stay-at-home moms, wives, need to work now. And some people are even saying legally women should be required to work if their children are in school, Don. This is just insane. But
so what? The police are going to show up at your door, say, ma'am, your kids are in school.
Go get a job.
Go get a job. How do they how do you force somebody to work?
They should just recruit them to the military.
Are they going to have work camps? And before you go to the work camps, you go to education camps? Just saying. I'm just wondering how this plays out.
Well, and what's interesting too, one of the arguments made is that there's currently an unfair tax concession for people who are enjoying one income households, and how the government is fearful of shaking this up and creating voter fury. There's an unfair tax incentive. For single income homes.
So the government, through their tax laws, are encouraging mothers to stay home. Is that
for there to only be one single income? And I could see where they're coming from, but at the same time, we also have a tax law that is encouraging women to stay single and have a child, to be a single mother.
Yeah.
Because I know many people, I've even have friends who have not gotten married because they get more money from the government if they're a single mom.
Yeah, that's encouraging, isn't it?
That's encouraging. Great.
Yeah. No, you're right. The tax laws are, by their nature, the tax laws do encourage and discourage certain actions. And fair enough, right? So actually, I get a tax break for having kids, right? If you don't make a certain amount of money, you get a tax break.
Why not dogs?
I mean...
I should get a tax break for that non-existent dog I have, or that goldfish my sister wants to get me. She thinks I need a goldfish. That way I have someone else in my space, you know, living alone. I had to very nicely tell her, please don't get me a goldfish, Because
you didn't want to kill the goldfish?
No, because I think they're dirty. Actually, she wanted one of those Chinese fighting fish. I can't remember what they're
really?
Called. Yeah, but I had to ask
it,
her.
Do you have to throw other fish in it for it to eat?
No, that would be so sad. See, people think I dislike animals. I just don't want pets or your pets around me. Simple.
that's a big difference. I did see the most honest article in a while the other day. The headline was, I had kids and now I hate my dog.
You know, I think that could be my mom.
Yeah. Well,
I think my mom feels the same way. Like, why would I want another one of you to clean up after?
I have made that argument not in so many words, though, to my own family. And it was so great, actually. A little side story here, Timory. My kids have wanted a dog for a long time. Now, I grew up with dogs. Not that I don't like dogs. It's just that I know dogs are work. And we have four kids, and it's not like we have 40 acres out behind our house to let them run around in. And so I said, no, it's just too much. Well, we got to dog sit a couple of weekends ago.
Oh, no.
Yes, and my son, who's 10, came up to me. He's like, Dad, this is a lot of work. I'm like, yes, thank you very much. The dog sitting worked out perfectly. So now I am not hearing the clamor.
That's interesting because we always grew up having a dog. We went a couple periods of time without one, and my siblings love their dog. And I mean, everyone has to pitch in to make it happen.
That's true.
A lot of the time, you know, my mom ends up being the one who does a lot of the work for that dog.
We have a guinea pig that I finally submitted.
Gross.
Hey, come on. No, I mean, we have a cute guinea pig.
You have a rodent in your house.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I do take care of that rodent, though. I am the one.
You don't let it sleep with you, right? In your bed?
No.
Okay, what's the difference between that and the dog?
Who would let a guinea pig sleep in their bed?
Who would let a dog sleep in
their
bed?
I'm with you on that one.
Okay.
All right, I don't want to offend anybody, but no. Listen, I think the dog should be outside.
I do too.
We had a cat.
I'm actually okay with a dog if it's outside.
Absolutely. Even cats, right? We had a cat when I got married, two of them. Just hair everywhere.
Cats are evil.
We've got so many people turning off the show right now.
We're going to get emails from PETA. But coming back to this situation in Australia, you know, really, the fact that people are pushing women to work is so interesting. And the fact that people are saying, oh, well, there's this tax break. That's how we got here. This tax break if you have a single income coming into a family home. Well, people are saying, well, those people shouldn't have a single income. They should be putting their children in child care. But then someone said, but that's government assistance in many senses when you're putting your children in child care. So instead of supporting a mom to be in the home and care for her own children, we should instead pay other people and get government assistance to care for those children.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, it seems to me.
Well, and you see examples of this. Even in Australia, you see, for example, Katie Ellis, shocked. She's in Parliament, right? And she's been working in politics for some time. And she ended up pulling out of work because she had a child. And this child, she eventually realized, while it could travel with her for the some 20 plus weeks a year that she was traveling, she realized eventually that once the child was hitting grade school, that she couldn't travel with this kid anymore. And this idea of working and having a child didn't make sense. And she's now left the workforce in a very successful political career. And people cannot believe it.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, what are the values? What are the underlying presuppositions behind the whole argument? Like, we're going to make more money. So? Is that going to gain you what you want, especially at the price of a whole generation do you want a whole generation of kids that has been raised in nothing but daycare?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I mean, we've talked, you know, listen, we're not anti-daycare. Some people have to. I get that. But I think we all admit that if we all had complete freedom to do whatever we wanted, actually, we wouldn't send the kids to government-sponsored daycare for 8-10 hours. I mean, this is just, I think, well, maybe it isn't common sense. I was going to say it's common sense, but maybe not anymore. But I just think the type of world that you are looking forward to, what kind of society are you looking forward to with these kind of demands? Everybody get into the workforce. Send all your kids to government-sponsored daycare.
That just sounds like a dystopia.
That's a whole industry of jobs. And so why is it that we have to regulate that job of childcare rather than allowing for the freedom within the home of a woman providing house care, childcare, and so forth? It's really just, in many ways, this pull of pulling responsibility away from the parents in many ways.
Oh, absolutely it is. And giving it to the government. And yes. What that means is giving it to a few people who are making decisions for everybody else.
Informing your children rather than yourself.
Absolutely. It is I think a bit of a disturbing trend.
Yep.
Have a fun video for you.
Oh, what is...
Have you heard of the show House Hunters?
Yes, I have.
Are you a fan?
It's been a while, but I did enjoy a few episodes here and there.
All right, well, comedian John Crist, evangelical Christian guy, likes to take some pot shots, if you will, at the evangelical Christian subculture in America. Now, I grew up within that, so there's a few references that he makes that I know that I'm going to get. Maybe not everybody who's a cradle Catholic is going to get, but I think that his approach to the topic of what's going on within our church culture in America really hits on a lot of things. And his latest video series, in fact, the second one just came out, is called Church Hunters, and it's a parody of House Hunters. Let me play you just a little clip here so we can get a feel for the show.
Nick and Molly just moved to the city and can't agree on what they want. They are young and energetic and looking for a new church home. We'll take some personality tests, tour the sites, ask some questions, and based on taste, experience, and location, we'll find them the perfect congregation.
I'm Corey Clark, and welcome to Church Hunters.
Now, at this point, I'm going to cut in here and just try to help you visualize. So it's very much in the same style as House Hunters, and you've got a picture of a whole bunch of churches, and this one doesn't have any free Wi-Fi, and this one has bad parking, and they're pointing out these things. And if you've never hunted for a church, and my wife and I have, it is, on one hand, it's one of the most depressing and horrible things that you do. It's also, interestingly, one of the most decried things within the evangelical subculture leadership, right? So I've been on a lot of church leadership boards. I've been on church staffs. My wife has too. We're very familiar with the culture. Nobody would come out and say, oh, I love it that everybody just shops around for churches, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody accepts that this is a good thing. So on some level, we, I think, understand both on a visceral level, like, oh, he's going to show up and he's going to check out whether we have Wi-Fi and he's going to check out the seats and they're going to check out this and that. And this is what the show, we'll play a few more clips, but this is what the show is getting at. Nobody would say this is a good thing. Like, we're happy that there's just so much church shopping going around, or church hunting.
Well, and from an outside perspective in here, I grew up with a lot of Protestant evangelical friends, and even working in the pro-life movement, we have a great common mission here. And I would hear all the time, while they weren't celebrating at all that they were church hopping or church searching, I would hear over and over again, well, we were here for a few years, but we have to find somewhere else now. And these long conversations, and it was like so laboring, and it reminded me of car shopping. Like, no one really wants to go car shopping. Do you really want to think about the window switches, the automatic lights? Like, really?
This is a fact. It is a struggle, okay? But people do it, and you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone out there in the evangelical world that hasn't hopped around mm-hmm. to several churches. And so the question I ask is this a good thing, for one thing? Is church something that we should be shopping for? And then secondly, when you do go out hunting for a church, what exactly is it that you're looking for? We'll be right back with a few more clips from the latest episode of Church Hunters. Stick around.
Tim Hillary Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Donna Timmery.
Have you seen the latest viral Facebook video called Church Hunters, Episode 1? Last time I checked, it had about 4 million views on Facebook. Incredibly popular viral video, taking a little shot at the whole notion that we should be hunting for churches. Yeah. Let me play you a little clip from Episode 1.
We're so excited to find a church. We just started dating.
With the churches we go to now, just not, like, for us, just not really doing it for us, you know?
Right. I go to a satellite campus. I just find it hard to connect emotionally with a video screen. It's just...
Okay, you cry during Cake Boss. So, like, we've been doing a lot of services online, a lot of podcasts. There are a lot of preachers we do like.
Really good, but we want serious yet funny.
Yeah, like commanding of the stage yet relatable, you know?
We're more looking for the humor of Andy Stanley with the body of Stephen Furtick.
Okay, so if you don't know who those guys are, you get the idea of the joke. I'm going to play you one more clip from a little bit later on here in this video.
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
I'm Corey.
Good to see you. My name's Nick. This
is
Molly.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Church Hunters.
This is your first church. This is Creekside First Baptist. So while it is traditional, it's still pretty current. This year, the pastor started untucking his shirts.
Oh. Big
deal. He does dress his age, though, so don't worry. He's past the Osteen suit phase, but he hasn't gone full Giglio yet.
Because there's holes in the knees or no?
Well, it's frayed, but no holes.
Frayed, no. Okay, got it. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. So, hey, let me...
So, I mean, is there tie, no tie? I mean, this is really important because, you know, you can't always wear a tie anymore. The first button has to be undone.
Oh, you cannot wear a tie.
No, it's a thing.
You think this is a joke. In the church that I attended, I remember the day when the pastor started untucking the shirt. This was a big, big deal. This is not made up stuff, Tim. This is not.
And the Protestants come back saying that our priests wear dresses.
He started untucking the shirt. Why? Not because the guy liked to wear untucked shirts, okay? He was told that if you're going to attract people to your church, that you need to have a more relaxed persona from the stage. This joke about are you wearing ripped jeans or not? I mean, this is a legit thing. In fact, there got to the point where there was a rule that if a visiting pastor came and was wearing a suit, jacket, and tie, they would actually make him remove the tie and the jacket before they spoke.
So is it about dressing nice for the congregation or dressing nice out of reverence and respect for God? Like, the whole thing, I can't even understand this. Like, I get it. It's funny. But why we can stoop to these levels in terms of where we're looking to worship? We're not car shopping.
Oh, but we are. And this is the thing to me. This is actually, I think, a much more serious topic than it is portrayed. I mean, one of the reasons it has 4 million, 5 million views, they've got episode 2 out that is now at, 300,000 on YouTube, probably another million
just
on Facebook
out
within a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's so popular is because it's so true. And the reason it's true is because this is a huge problem within Protestant evangelical, within Protestantism, really, but certainly within the low church evangelicalism that we have here, mostly in America. The whole reason you go to church is not, I think, openly stated, but it is stated in these videos. You notice that the first thing they talked about was how good is the preacher, right? So the guy's like, well, we've been at a satellite campus. Well, do you know what a satellite campus is?
Yes, where you have a screen and the main campus, like a saddleback or somewhere, is projecting it.
And what you're projecting is the preacher. So you've got this superstar preacher somewhere, could be across the country. He's piped in on the screen.
Come on, Jesus, can't you pipe in from heaven?
But here's, Timmery, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with Jesus or reverence for God or anything. Like, you talk about, well, why would I get dressed up for church? Well, because it is a sacred place. I'm going to go enter into the presence of Jesus. This is something I should get dressed up for. I think that's the mindset generally, that there's a difference between church and the ball game. The ball game is less sacred. when I go to someplace sacred, I get dressed up for it. When I go to a wedding, I get dressed up for it. Or you know, like the elevated stature.
And this is a lesson for Catholics as well, because we struggle with understanding and needing to have respect. I think most people probably dress nicer to go to a ball game because it's an outing than they do to church a lot of the time.
Unfortunately, that's the case. And it does result from the loss of, I think, the whole notion that we're entering into the presence of God. Surely that should not be lost within the Catholic Church, and I agree it is missing. But in the thing is, in the Protestant Church, that's not there.
You ain't got him.
There is no presence, right? It's not about the presence. All of that was abandoned at the Reformation. Mm-hmm. They got rid of all the sacraments except for two. What did the church service become at the Reformation? It became all about the sermon. That's the main thing. You go to a Protestant service, you sing a few songs, but it's all a lead up to the message. And a lot of times, this is a 45-minute message, an hour message. Mm-hmm. Some of these guys, they preach for an hour and a half. If that's what this church service is about, then how am I going to go about choosing which church I should go to? Well, the first thing is, he's got to be a good preacher. And so all of the first jokes, you notice every one of the opening jokes in this whole thing.
Is he funny? Does he have this humor?
Is he good looking? Mm-hmm. What clothes does he wear? It's all about the pastor. And frankly, they touched on something at the beginning that I think is way underrated. They talked about, well, I listen to the podcast or I go to the satellite service, right? Technology has actually made the whole reason to go to a Protestant church?
Unnecessary.
And I've had this discussion with close friends of mine. They're like, listen, we live in a small town. The local preacher's simply not that good. What can I do? I can't expect him to be a superstar. So you know what I do? I stay home and I listen to podcasts or I watch it on TV. Why would I go and be bored at my local church?
I see this all the time, even with friends posting online. They say, oh, busy day with the girls, couldn't make it to church. We're listening to
absolutely
show right now, a podcast, or whatever it is.
Or you stay home, you stream it, right? And you ask yourself, if church can be essentially replaced by me staying at home, watching it on a screen, or listening to the audio, then what's the point of church? And if it is just another place to learn about something, life principles, theology, whatever it is.
But that's basically not even consistent. And that's the problem. These life principles, theology, it's not the same at every church you're going to. So if that's all you're looking for, because I remember even working in the crisis pregnancy centers, I sometimes personally really struggled when we would be working within an ecumenical sphere. And when you have this girl, she chooses to have her child, right? She has lived a life. Maybe it's been a life of course, sex outside of marriage. Maybe it's been an example of prostitution. She's looking at you right now saying, help show me to find this straight and narrow path, because I recognize I'm all over it and I don't know where truth is. And I would struggle when I would see some counselors say, well, part of what you need in your life is God, because that's true. Yeah. But you need a substance, something strong, underlying, to hold accountable the teaching of theology. But what would happen, they'd say, oh, well, go and try this church out. It's got a nice band. It wouldn't be a Catholic church. And I would look at them and say, this girl's about to end her child's life through abortion, and you're going to point her to a church that is not consistent on the teaching of abortion because it's not consistent in its theology.
Well, and underlying that, though, Timory, on what basis would they say go to a different church? Like, right? Like, let's say they did pick one that was more consistent. Within the Protestant ethos, where it is just you and the Bible and trying to figure out what's the best interpretation, on what basis am I going to pick a church?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we've talked about this last week, I think, on the show. There is no solid basis if you just have the Bible. And this is why I don't think the whole notion of which church teaches truth comes up in any of the episodes of Church Hunters so far, which is interesting.
The only relevant question I hear is, does he quote scripture?
Yeah. And what does that mean? Does he agree with my interpretation of scripture, ultimately?
Does he quote it out of context, maybe? Does that matter?
Does it matter? Right. Are we going to a Bible-centered church? And this is an interesting trend in America, because traditionally, that would have been the biggest deal. Like, which church teaches truth? Mm-hmm. And that's why we had all these hard denominations, because they would have a disagreement, and you would have a church split. And then this group would go over here and say, all right, this is what we teach. If you come to our church, this is what we teach. If you go to that church, that's what they're going to teach. And so people would pick the one that they agreed with, and they would go to that church, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went to a new town, what you would do is search out the one that agreed with you. So let's say you went to an evangelical free church, or you went to a Church of God, Anderson, Indiana, or a First Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, or whatever.
It's reminding me of a voter guide of pro-life, pro-scripture. You got to check it all off and then line up the check marks and decide which one you're going to go to.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. And so because of the denominations were a bit stricter, you could go to, well, I go to Church of God Anderson. Oh, no, well, I go to Church of God, but not Anderson. Like, I'd go to First Baptist, I go to Second, I go to Third, I go to 17th Baptist. They would all be different. But you'd at least know, okay, this is what they teach. Interestingly, that has all fallen away now for the most part. People don't care so much about what you teach because they realize it's all a free-for-all. I have no basis for this. And it has been reduced to, do I like the pastor? Do I like the parking? Do I like the band? Do I like this? Do I like
that? Is it tweet-worthy? Or one of them where the guy was saying, well, how big is the band? Is it front and center? Because if I'm up there, I'm going to get a lot of Facebook likes, a lot of people on Instagram. We're going to be really interested. We'll get some great views on that video because I'm front and center.
Yeah, I would just say that this couldn't be any other way. If you decry the church shopping culture, what you are doing is you're looking at the very model of church that Protestantism presents, and you're saying that's not satisfactory. Because the way Protestantism is set up, it has to lead to church shopping. It couldn't be any other way. You're listening to Trending with Don and Turmeric. We'll be right back after this short break. Stick around.
Studios of Immaculate Heart Radio. You're listening to Trending.
Trending
with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Have you been church hunting lately? Comedian John Crist has had some very entertaining videos. I encourage you to go check them out. You probably have already seen them if you're on Facebook at all. Millions and millions of people have been viewing the little parody series that takes off on house hunters, which, frankly, my family enjoys. We enjoy little house hunters now and again.
I had real-life house hunters. Mom's a real estate agent.
Oh,
so
nice.
I was there. I lived it.
Nice. Have you had the HGTV come and do any of your searches?
Before. No. There's enough work already. Yeah, I don't think we need to add that on.
We don't need the cameras. Well, it's been interesting. It's been so popular, but it speaks to such a deep truth. I think that's one of the reasons it's been so popular. So you have this young, hip couple looking around, and they say things like, does the pastor wear ripped jeans? You know, is it relevant? What's the parking situation like? Is there a big screen? Can I play in the band? You know, all of the sort of like things that we would say, oh, no, that would never be why I'd go to a church.
But there's a more important question at the heart of this. Where's the truth of it?
That is the question, right? I mean, and do we even care anymore about which church teaches truth? Because that would have been the issue years ago.
But it's not even a question only of church now, which is why I think we're seeing this upcoming Time magazine cover that has a lot of people asking questions. New Time magazine, the front is truth dead?
Yeah, if you're a longtime follower of Time magazine, they made a lot of news 51 years ago with the black cover with the red font, Is God Dead? One of their iconic covers in the whole history of the Time magazine. And they recreated that cover this week with Is Truth Dead? And the article itself, it's a hit piece on Trump, and
President Trump.
We don't need to get into the politics of this necessarily, but the bigger issue of whether or not truth is dead and how it relates to whether or not God is dead, I'm not sure if the editors realized how closely those things are tied together.
That has to be intentional.
See, maybe I'm too cynical. I'm not sure that they would make that connection themselves. This is what makes me wonder, because the reason that we're even asking the question, is truth dead? And this, to me, strikes me, this is like a Pontius Pilate question, like, what is truth? If you're asking, is truth dead, what do you mean, is truth dead? Are you saying that there's no reality to which we must conform ourselves, to which we must explore? I mean, what are you saying? I don't think that's what they're saying. I think they're getting at the whole idea of, is there such a thing as truth? Like, can we even know things that are objectively factual? And if we can't, or if we don't agree that that is possible, what kind of culture do we live in? And this, I think, is the take they were going. Like, the president seems to be able to say a whole bunch of things and no one really cares. He says contradictory things. Frankly, every politician these days, they just say contradictory things. One minute they say this, the next minute they say this, and they don't seem to care.
But how often is that now, Don, that that's what people are doing in their own lives? They say they believe something. They say they have some type of life principle, but what they do doesn't match. And sure, yes, we read the struggles of people like St. Paul, who he's saying, my body's doing the very things I don't want to do. That's him fighting it. And he has a source of truth that he is trying to conform himself to. But today we say, my truth is my truth. Your truth is your truth. Everything's relative. And in the meantime, what's happening is that people aren't living up to what their quote unquote truth is. And it's leaving them incredibly unhappy because there's this disorder in the lifestyle and the person they're claiming to be.
Yeah. Would we call it maybe a cognitive dissonance where there's, I believe, I guess that everything is relative and I can just make it up as I go along. Yet, when I try to live that way, guess what? Reality does not actually conform to your wishes. Okay. Things like gravity, you know, gravity is a classic example. Just because you don't believe in gravity is not going to stop gravity. It's not going to turn it off. If I go jump off the top of this building, I'm going to fall and probably die. It doesn't matter my beliefs about it. Yet we have this notion in society that, well, in certain areas, maybe that, you know, my beliefs, they make up reality. So if I believe certain things about the sexual sphere, or lying, or any of these things, well, truth conforms to me. No, it doesn't. And so that's what time is delving into, this whole notion that we don't even have a standard by which we can judge anyone's statements. No one seems to have a standard by which they can live. How do we get here? And I think, hey, you know what? You hit on it with your magazine cover this week. The way we got here is we got rid of God.
Well, and you know what's interesting? This is making me think back. A friend of mine, Dr. Jennifer Roback Borse, incredible work. I know you're familiar with her, yeah. The Ruth Institute. But she's working on a billboard campaign right now to encourage people to go to confession. And so she was sending this out among her friends online. She was saying, hey, which one do you like? One of them has like bunch of party, like Mardi Gras type of decorations, and it says the party's over, go to confession. One of them, though, that people liked the most was sin makes you stupid, go to confession. Yeah, and that's actually the one I like the most, but it makes me think of this. We've taken God out of our culture for many people. We've justified our own truth. We've sinned to an extent without accountability that we're not realizing that we've justified and we've created our own situational analysis saying this is a great situation or the next situation, it's okay, we justify. That I think of this sin makes us stupid. Sin makes it so that we don't see truth, that there can even be truth. We doubt that there is even the existence of God because nothing is true to us. I hear people reaching out. I know you get the same. I get emails, letters, reaching out on social media saying, I want to believe. I grew up with a great faith, but I just don't believe that Jesus died for my sins. I just don't believe that our faith is real. I don't feel it. Well, you're not going to feel anything or even think and know anything if you are so entrenched in sin.
Yeah, that's right. It changes your thinking. And indeed, it's sort of a reciprocal relationship, I would say, that sin changes your thinking, but it also starts with a bit of bad thinking. Like they go back and forth. As you think poorly, you sin. And as you sin more, you think even more poorly. And I love the sin makes you stupid thing. Aquinas was big on this, that sin ultimately is to live contrary to reality. Right? G.K. Chesterton liked to say that the only sin is to call a green leaf gray.
You're basically living a lie.
Yeah, you're living a lie. You're trying to live in a way that simply is counter to the way things are. So just like cars can't run on water because they're not made to, well, we can't run on anything ultimately but God. And when we try to do that, all sorts of bad things happen. And we wonder, why do I not feel this way? Why am I unhappy? Well, are you living in a way that you were not made to live? And as you do that more and more, this is the interesting thing. So you start out sort of denying reality. Sin is an insanity in some ways, right? It's just living contrary to the way things are. As you do that, you become more and more blind to reality.
But people are going to argue back, well, I'm a good person. I don't, let's say, I don't look at pornography. Let's say I don't kill people. I don't steal. But at the heart of things, okay, you may be a good person. You may be doing good things. But what's the difference between a good person and a person of faith? Well, the difference, it's a real question, is a virtue. Are you doing things for the right reasons? Or am I serving in a poor, impoverished community as a missionary because it makes me feel good and because I get attention for doing it? Or am I doing it because these people really do need help and I recognize God created them and he's calling me to see him in them?
Yeah, right. Christian ethics are ultimately geared toward making you a particular kind of person. That's
perfecting each act.
Yeah, right. So, for instance, Jesus comes and is much more strict regarding the law in many ways. So he looks at the Old Testament, he says, well, you've heard it say, do not murder. But I tell you, do not even hate a person, or do not commit adultery. But I tell you, do not even lust. Mm-hmm. Right? And so Jesus is looking at the inner self. What are you on the inside? This is what it's all about, developing virtue, just like you said. We don't want to say that you can't be somewhat virtuous
if you've sinned, or if you're,
or if you're not a Christian,
or if you're doubting that God exists.
Right, right.
I'm not saying you're some major sinner. I'm saying these little things do get in the way.
Right. And ultimately, the goal of life is to become that virtuous person, that truly loving person. It all, I mean, the whole law is summed up in love. The meaning of life is love. And as you become the person you were intended to be, you will love more. You will find yourself more joyful, more at peace, more content with your life because you're lined up with ultimate reality.
The That's plan of who you were created to be. We're a body and a soul, but more so, we can't forget that soul part, because that's what lives on into eternity, and our body will be resurrected one day with it if we live in a way that is according to God's order. We call this in theology Christosis. You're becoming like Christ. You're being crystallized. And I love that Christosis word because it reminds us God is perfect. And I'm meant to be drawing myself into that great and bloody sacrifice of the cross. We make the sign of the cross as Catholics to remind us of our baptism, yes, but to look at that cross and be reminded this is life-giving, self-giving love. And it is bloody, it is bruised, it is beaten, it is painful. But that is what it is. And he's being perfected in it.
Beautiful way to end the show, Timmery. This has been the very first episode of Trending with Dawn and Timmery. We do hope that you will subscribe to the podcast. If you have been subscribed to The Dawn Johnson Show or Hearts and Minds, those will continue for a few more weeks, but ultimately we'd like you to subscribe to Trending with Dawn and Timmery. So find
it. And give us a review on our new show.
Yeah, that's important, to get reviews and tell your friends and share it on all your social media. Don't forget to go to ReverseTheRevolution.com to find out more about the Sexual Revolution documentary I am currently working on. We'll see you next time.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.